FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's July 23rd, 2018. And much to talk about. First, I'm back from a lengthy trip to Vegas at Freedom Fest and then Vancouver for the Sprott Resource Conference. A couple of great conferences. Met a lot of you out there, had a lot of fun. And hey, as always, join the fun, join the conversation, which more and more of you have been doing. Email us, kl@kerrylutz.com, and you'll see we've got a couple of questions we're going to answer right now. John Rubino and I. John, happy Monday.
Hey, Kerry. Happy Monday.
Hey, so start off, we got two questions here. All right. Number one is from Gary. Says, hi, Kerry. Big fan. I have a question for you and John Rubino. Where do you draw the line on what is and what is not market manipulation? For example, anybody can trade options and shorts, right? But somehow dumping trillions of dark money into commodities markets to pump or squash the spot price does not seem to be fair. Thanks, Gary.
A lot of what happens that we consider to be manipulation is in the derivatives market. And derivatives were actually a good idea originally. You know, they were designed for instance, a farmer to buy a futures contract to lock in the price of whatever the farmer's selling at harvest time, so he knows what his revenue is. He can match it to his costs and hopefully turn a profit. But in the intervening 30 or 40 years, you know, those instruments have come to be abused in a lot of ways that we would consider to be manipulation. Now, you mentioned these weird late night plunges in gold and silver because somebody's dumping a ridiculous amount of futures contracts at 4 o'clock in the morning when every major market is closed. That's obviously manipulation. And they obviously get away with it because they do it over and over again. Basically, what some big bank somewhere or a government does is they figure out where the technical sell signals would be broadcast in, for instance, silver, which would lead everybody else to sell. So they push the price down using futures contracts to just below that level. And all the good until canceled stop loss orders kick in, and then the market plunges. And so it goes way down for about an hour in the middle of the night. And then everybody wakes up to a down market, and they're spooked. In that way, they manipulate, depress the market for precious metals. And that's done, and that's clearly manipulation, and they clearly get away with it. There are lots of other variations on this theme. You know, you hear about the Commitment of Traders report all the time, in which the commercials are always suckering the speculators in and then fleecing them, and that causes short-term cycles in gold and silver of maybe 6 months each. That's manipulation, but it's more of a game that's being played by the futures traders among themselves. It's not designed to further a public policy goal of depressing precious metals. And it doesn't interfere with the long-term trends in gold and silver. So that's fairly benign. You know, that's a kind of a trading fluctuation that regular people can get in on. The bigger manipulation, the long-term manipulation, and especially gold, is perpetrated by governments and their bullion bank, which is just big banks like JP Morgan Chase and Goldman Sachs partners, where the government will take some of the gold in its central bank vaults, give it to or lend it to these bullion banks, who then sell it on the open market to depress the price. In this way, they're able to keep the price of gold from rising as much as it would otherwise just based on fundamentals, and convince people that that's not a good asset to own. And the reason they do that is because gold and silver are competing forms of money with the world's fiat currencies. When gold and silver go up, that's the same thing as saying the dollar is going down. And that makes the government look bad. It makes them look like incompetent managers of their money. And since fiat currencies only exist because we have confidence in the people managing them, that's a deadly threat. And because of that, they're willing to do extreme things in order to squash the competition. Gold and silver are competition. And so they do these things behind the scenes to manipulate the prices of those metals lower. And that's despicable because if a market is supposedly free, then you've got a lot of players out there making bets one way or the other. And allocating capital according to the price signals that are being broadcast by these supposedly free markets. But if you go secretly into those markets and manipulate them, you're costing these people money. You're defrauding, for instance, short sellers in the stock market when you artificially inflate stock prices. You're defrauding gold owners and gold mining companies and the countries that produce a lot of gold when you artificially manipulate the price of gold lower. So you're committing a crime, and we should view it that way. These are crimes committed by governments and their big bank partners against people who want to own legitimate, sound money. So far, nothing has been done or really can be done about it because the enforcement mechanism is part of government. You know, so government's right. not going to investigate and convict itself of crimes.
I think not.
In these fields. So we're going to see more of this in the future, but eventually fundamentals will still win out. It's just taking much longer than it would.
Yeah. Are we there yet, Dad?
Yeah. Well, you know, we're getting there because other governments are doing the opposite of what the Western governments are doing when it comes to gold and silver. China and Russia and India are buying it hand over fist. They're taking up all the gold and silver, or all the gold at least, that is produced by the world's gold mines, just those three countries every year. Mm-hmm. And they're holding on to it. They're not using it to manipulate the price. They're just holding it as an asset that they believe protects them and maybe will enrich them in the future. And they've got the resources to continue to do this. At some point, the Western central banks will run out of gold in their vaults and won't be able to play these games anymore. And the price will then start behaving according to fundamentals, which means it'll go way up. That'll enrich the guys who have been buying the gold. It'll impoverish the guys who have been selling the gold. And the world will be as it should be. It's not yet, but those days are coming because the amount of gold that has been flowing out of the world's central banks is immense. So they can't have all that much more left. And their firepower is going to diminish over time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you, John. I really am. But it sure has taken longer than anybody could have ever imagined.
Oh, yeah. You know, in a book I co-wrote with Gold Money's James Turk, way back in 2004, we had an actual chapter titled "The Coming Bullion Bank Short Squeeze." We were predicting that this would hit in 2006, 2007, and it still hasn't hit yet. But all that means is the imbalances have been allowed to get even bigger.
Yeah.
The Eastern countries have been able to accumulate even more gold. The Western companies have lost more of their gold. And the bullion banks are on the hook because central banks lend them the gold. They don't give it to them, which means at some point the bullion banks have to go into the market and buy gold in order to satisfy their obligation to the central banks. They've got to give that gold back to them at some point. And if they have to do that under duress, in other words, if they do have a short squeeze where they have no choice but to buy at any price in order to give that gold back, then that's going to be like rocket fuel for the gold market. That will elevate it at least as much as the manipulation has depressed it. So we'll see big gaps up in gold and silver at some point. And all you can do is just have some now as insurance and know that at some point in the future, it's going to pay off, but you can't know when.
Yeah. Obviously, if you knew when, then the word would be out and everyone could be doing it. So next question is from Rich Z. And so there's another channel out there, King World News. They've got all these guys there. They're regular five guys. And, you know, there was a question of him that from King World News that Andrew McGuire, he made an incredible claim that some German and Swiss banks are refusing to hand over physical gold to their clients from their allocated gold accounts. Any way to get independent verification of this? And McGuire, I don't know about this guy. Jeffrey Christian, who is a friend and who is quite knowledgeable about the market, published some damaging info about McGuire years ago, and it seemed to make absolutely no difference. What's your take on Andrew McGuire and this statement that German and Swiss banks aren't handing over physical gold to their clients from their allocated gold accounts?
Well, he's fun to listen to, but it's not clear that the specific predictions he has been making have ever turned out to be true.
Yeah.
Or who have ever worked out in the time frame in which he predicts that they will. So I don't know what to make of it. I view him as kind of a performance artist. You know, the stuff he does is really interesting, and it's got all this mm-hmm. technical verbiage in it that he just, you know, pours out really articulately.
Yeah.
And it's fun to listen to. And the predictions that he makes are really exciting. But as anybody who's been in the gold and silver market for the last 5 years or so knows, things have been really boring rather than exciting as he predicts they're going to become. So I have no idea what to make of it. I wouldn't trade on anybody's supposedly inside knowledge mm-hmm. of the gold and silver markets, because as you said, if that knowledge was public, then it wouldn't be useful anymore because everybody would have already acted on it.
Right.
So by the time that the average person hears about it, the traders who are obsessing about it 24/7 will have heard about it and had time to act on it, and the market will already be moving in that direction. So this is not tradable data as far as I can tell, but it's entertaining. So it depends on your goal in consuming that kind of information. If you want to be entertained, it's excellent. If you want trading signals, maybe not so much.
Yeah, you know, you can't believe, and we never make any representations here about information being able to move the markets, et cetera. Here's your, you know, even when I called Bitcoin at the peak, I didn't say, you know, this was the inside deal or anything. He's always making all these claims. He said that he was shot at one time and the police had apprehended the person who shot at him. You know, all of these things here that just make me very skeptical about the man. I have no idea if any of what he says is true or not. And more importantly, I have no means of being able to verify it, and neither do you, right?
Yeah, yeah. There's an immense amount of information and opinion mm-hmm. coming at us all the time.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to separate out the 1% of it that is actionable, you know, that actually gives you a chance to make some money by acting on it, from the 99% that is somewhere between noise and entertainment. Mm-hmm. And that's why the average person shouldn't be day trading or taking aggressive positions with short time frames, because we really don't have the kind of information that we need to do that correctly. There are millions of professional traders out there in the world who have better information and who are paying better attention than we are. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Kerry, when you and I talk about what people should do, we're talking about long-term repositioning of finances. In other words, shift your finances away from dependence mm-hmm. on fiat currencies, which are clearly being inflated away by governments and in a process that will only accelerate with time, and towards real assets that will tend to hold their value because they can't be created in infinite right. quantities on government electronic printing presses. Mm-hmm. That's not something that is really a trade. You know, that's just change your lifestyle. Exactly. You know, lose some weight, exercise more, buy a little gold and silver. Yeah. Those are all great things in the long run. They won't necessarily make a difference this week, but it's what you want to do if you want to be safer and healthier and happier over the coming decades. Mm-hmm. And I'm convinced that that is true, that you want to be over time shifting out of, you know, government bonds that pay you interest in fiat currencies and bank accounts that are denominated in dollars or euros or yen, and towards gold and silver stored in a safe place, some at your house, some in a safe deposit box, some overseas. I think you'll be better off at some point in the not too distant future if you do that. But what happens next week or next month or in the coming year is absolutely unpredictable. And anybody who tells you otherwise probably just wants your money.
Exactly the point. And always wonder. And one thing, when I have people on who promote stocks, which we have a number of different ones, I always make sure that these are not pump and dumps, bona fide companies with real life prospects. A lot of them have gone up after they've appeared on the show. Some of them have gone down. We can't make any predictions as to what's going to happen to these stocks. Just giving you ideas. And people that I work with, if I didn't trust their selections, I wouldn't allow them on the show. It's that simple. It's credibility. So you have to make your own decisions is the point. And you have to really watch what's going on and see if your plan needs to be changed. Speaking of which, John, it looks like the COT report is showing some changes in precious metals holdings positions by the specs and the commercials.
Yeah. Well, things are kind of shaping up well for precious metals right now. The seasonality is starting to pass. There's the old saying, sell in May and go away. That is basically true, because the Asian buying usually comes later in the year and then early in the following year, and not much comes in the summer and prices tend to fall. Meanwhile, the commitment of traders report is a cyclical thing. Every few months or a little longer, you get changes in the positioning of the players in the futures market. The speculators get overexcited one way or the other. Either they're terrified or they're ebullient. And they take extreme positions, which are usually wrong. And the commercial traders, who are big banks and the fabricators who actually use precious metals for various things, tend to take the opposite side of those trades. Mm-hmm. So when you see the speculators get positioned in a really extreme way, one way or the other, it usually means the market's going the opposite way. Well, lately, the speculators have been very bullish and gold and silver have gone down. Now they're getting bearish. They're starting to take bigger and bigger short positions out there. And another couple of weeks at the recent trend would make them bearish enough to give a buy signal. In other words, historically, when they've been that bearish, prices have started to go up. So heading into September and October, we're looking at good seasonals for gold and silver and a possibly favorable commitment of traders structure, which means that, you know, again, this isn't a trading signal. I'm not saying go out and load up on gold and silver, but I'm saying that the news ought to be more favorable over the next 6 months than it has been in the previous 6 months, which is good for gold and silver holders and potentially very good for people who own the stocks of gold miners, because they're really beaten down. Very. And they tend to be more volatile than gold and silver. So if gold and silver have a good few months, the stocks of the best quality gold miners ought to have a great few months. So this might be a good time to start nibbling at high quality miners without my naming names, because that's a dangerous game in this business. But find a good source of information on gold miners, a good newsletter like Jay Taylor's one of the other ones in that space, and listen to what they say, because these are guys who spend a lot of time digging into the nuts and bolts of the various gold and silver miners, and they have a pretty good sense and a pretty good historical track record on steering you away from the dangerous ones and putting you into the ones with the most potential. Yeah. And then, you know, grab a few. Don't jump in with both feet. Don't mortgage your house to buy gold mining stocks, but make them part of the ongoing shift away from dollars and euros and yen and into real assets.
And that, and you know, there's a question here that's been sitting here for like a month that I meant to raise, that's very relevant to this. Hi, Carrie, love your show. I used to have many, many Bitcoin. Unfortunately, I got out way before the bubble. That's okay. Getting out made me ask myself a question that I don't ever hear anyone else ask. What happens if there's no electricity or no internet? That's right. You won't have any money. Nothing, nada. Crypto needs electricity and bandwidth. If one bad thing happens, it will be nightmarish. People's wealth wiped out forever. I think there are many awesome things about crypto, but as for me and my house, we're sticking with a little bit of everything. So, you know, it kind of goes on, but he raises a valid point that without the internet and without reliable electricity, cryptos will cease to exist very quickly.
Yeah, cryptocurrencies do depend on a working internet as a general rule. Mm-hmm. So that's good and that's bad. I mean, the fact that they're basically just bits in a computer system means you can transfer them instantly. They're incredibly portable. You can move money anywhere you want to with a click of your mouse, and that's incredibly convenient. But if the internet goes down for whatever reason, then you're kind of stuck. But remember, the same thing is true for our credit cards and for our bank accounts and for anything that's not cash in hand. So cryptocurrencies are in the same category as a brokerage account or a bank account or the credit cards in your wallet, in the sense that they require an electronic infrastructure to be usable. It doesn't mean you lose them if the electricity goes down for a while. They will still exist when the electricity comes back up. But it does mean that you can't use them when you need them when that's happening. Yeah. So regardless of whether you've got cryptocurrencies in an account or you use your bank account with an ATM to draw out cash when you need it, or you use your credit cards, you still need physical cash of some sort for the times when, for whatever reason, you don't have access to the internet. So when I say get out of fiat currencies, mm-hmm. I don't mean completely. You should still have some dollar cash if you're in the U.S. or Canadian dollar or whatever. Whatever country you're in, you need local cash to get you through a few weeks of spending. Mm-hmm. And that should be one of the bedrock financial assets that you keep around, along with some gold and silver coins. They're always, always valuable. No matter what's going on, you'll always be able to find somebody who will take silver coins in return for real stuff.
Absolutely.
So totally always do that.
Yep. Yep. And that's a valid point, that cryptos are no more or less vulnerable to the infrastructure issues, talking about power. And I'm talking about power and internet than any other type of money that we utilize now. So if one goes down, they all go down, basically. So it's an interesting point you make, and I totally agree with it. Anyway, that's it for this week. So just keep the questions coming, kl@carrielutz.com. As you see, we honor your questions, and we love getting them. We love speaking about them. And just go over to John's site, dollarcollapse.com. Sign up for his newsletter. Sign up for ours, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Twitter feed, @CarrieLutz. Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. If you're on YouTube, click that subscribe button and the ringer. John, you get like more comments on YouTube than you can imagine, which most of them are pretty favorable, but not all, which is exactly what you'd expect on YouTube, right? Anyways, that's it for this week. John, we'll catch up with you next Monday. Same time, same bat channel. See you then.
See you, Carrie.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.